Hey everyone, welcome to a Godzillion and One podcast. We're so glad that you're joining us today. In fact, today, if you watch Jeopardy, there's something called the Daily Double. And so the Daily Double is this thing where it shows up on the board and you have this opportunity to go, oh, wait, if I really invest in this and I get the answer right, you get a 2-for-1. Maybe that's a way to put it. You get a 2-for-1 today.
You get double the episode.
Yes, double the episodes. There we go. So we're not asking you to bet anything. We're not asking you. You don't have to get an answer to a trivia question right. But we're going to offer you a Daily Double today. And there is a connection, though. It makes sense to me when you said, hey, this is the way we're putting these together, this part one and part two, because it really is, as you've been calling it, it's a relationship Daily Double.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Newhoff. Tony is a family law mediator and a former divorce attorney, which means, by the way, that Tony has seen this side of a relationship breaking apart. She has seen it up close many times. So her book, Before You Split, is what I love is that word before. You know, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of divorce attorneys and former divorce attorneys out there telling you, hey, when it happens, this is the way to go. And this is how to do it. And this is how to navigate through that really difficult process. What I love about her book title and about what Tony ends up sharing with us is that word before. What she's really sharing with us is, you know, a way forward for people who are maybe on the brink of a relational meltdown, on the brink of divorce. You're in the middle of a struggling marriage. And I don't know, I appreciated like how just honest she was about the process and how practical it was. Do you feel like there was, like, to me, there was really nuts and boltsy in certain parts of her conversation with us?
Oh yeah, there were really practical things. There's even a challenge she came up with that she tests on her husband, which is also one of my favorite things about hearing Tony talk about this. Is she talks about her own struggles in her marriage and what worked for her, and so she's got investment in these tools. It's not just something she wrote about. She knows how life-changing they can be. So she's got this challenge that she did with her and her husband. She admits her husband was way better at the challenge than she was. It's something that I think we could do this week, even outside of marriage. You could do it with
absolutely
someone you're dating, you're engaged, even just a friendship of if you feel like there's this just something off between you guys. And it feels like every time somebody starts a conversation, you're just speaking different languages and you're bumping heads. She's got a really, really practical challenge for each of us.
Her outlooks, there were like the three outlooks on marriage of split, survive, and save was another way of looking at this. And to me, the idea of trying everything you can try before you split. And some of the honest, I mean, like brutally honest stories of what people would come back to her and say, I wish I had known this before going through the divorce process. You know, a lot of times we hear that and it's like, well, why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you tell me then? Mm-hmm. Well, Tony is telling you then. And so if you are going through a relational struggle right now, if you know someone who is going through a relational struggle and maybe is even considering divorce. And statistically, let's go on ahead and say, we could all probably sit here for 5 minutes and a name or a couple or ourselves would rise to the surface and we go, yep, that's me. Which means this is probably one of those episodes where even as we're listening, we're going to want to think of people that we invite into this and say, hey, you're going to want the Daily Double here. So this is just such a practical, beautiful, important conversation that we want to jump in on now. And I'll say one more time, after listening to Tony's interview, be sure to check out part two with Dr. Emerson Eggerich, who is the best-selling author of Love and Respect, and you're going to see real quickly how these two fit together. But for now, let's drop in on our conversation with Tony. Tony, I know that you're a former divorce attorney, you're a pastor's wife, you're an author, you're a speaker, so you have many different inputs and insights about this idea of marriage, and I would say, tell me if you agree, but the struggle and the strain that marriages are in today. Your book is Before You Split, Find What You Really Want for the Future of Your Marriage. So can you just, big question here, but tell us how God placed that message on your heart.
It took him a while. So Carrie and I have talked publicly about how much we struggled in our marriage, probably the depths of it being about 15 years ago. And so we can now joke about it and say it was the 10-year argument, but there was nothing funny about it at the time. We really did get just mired in this vicious cycle of conflict that we felt completely stuck in. And in the latter part of my law career, I practiced as a divorce attorney for several years. So I could have imagined myself being on the other side of the desk. And I walked through the divorce process with many people, some of whom ended up really disappointed. God just seemed to make it clear to me that I could help clarify for people what divorce does entail, you know, what the consequences are for people who are in that place of really feeling stuck. And then also some of the pitfalls and solutions that Carrie and I had worked our way through. So putting those together, I really hope to help people just see themselves more clearly, see the circumstances more clearly, see their options more clearly, and maybe even give their marriage a second try.
You said something recently that I heard, and I've never heard this phrase before, and it came out of your, I believe it came out of your time as a divorce attorney, where a man looked at you at the end of the process, and you said some people are disillusioned with divorce.
I remember this one man who I worked with. We went all the way through the divorce process, and he was a successful businessman. He had three kids, and once he had his signature on the final separation agreement, he looked at me with tears in his eyes, and he said, "If only I'd known then what I know now, I would have worked harder to save my marriage." And it wasn't that he got a bad deal. He got a very fair deal based on, you know, the laws that are in place in Ontario. It was simply that he didn't realize the emotional distress that he went through through that divorce period. I mean, everyone who came to see me wanted to have their divorce finalized yesterday, you know, but if not yesterday, then within several weeks. But the reality of the process was that for most people, that wasn't realistic. And it was a lot of grief, unfortunately.
It's going to cost you either way, living in this broken world. Divorce is not this idealized off-ramp to pain and struggle. And I think I'm hearing you say that part of what you're trying to do in this book and in some of the things that you've written and spoken about in other places is think that through before you split, because it will cost you. This divorce will cost you, but it does cost us to work through our stuff with our spouse as well, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, I like to illustrate it this way. Imagine that, you know, you're in the place where Carrie and I were, where, you know, we had young kids. We were really struggling with each other, and it's tempting when you're in the depths of pain, where you can find yourselves, even if you wholeheartedly believe in Jesus and wholeheartedly want to follow Him. You know, you can still find yourself in that place, and you can imagine that. Well, I can take these relationship problems at least and pack them in a box. Put the box away, you know, somebody will sweep it away like the garbage. But the reality is that once the date of separation arrives, it's a new day and you get a second box. So in this box, you have any of the financial and property issues you have to work through. If you have kids, then you've got the parenting schedule and how you're going to make decisions and where the kids are going to live and when. And then in that box, you also have all the unresolved relationship problems that you thought you did away with when you gave away the first box. And people struggle. I had so many clients who needed to be able to work with each other for the sake of their kids, but struggled so deeply that they needed a counselor's help to be able to make progress. And for the emotional health of your kids, you need to be able to do that. Going to a counselor when you've already set your mind on leaving a relationship behind is a tough pill to swallow.
If you've already flipped that switch, it's difficult to come back a couple of steps and even imagine that there's hope or that there's a future or that there's a potential there.
It may not be that they were going to counseling because there was a hope of reconciliation, because, you know, that might be realistic for some couples. And I would encourage anyone who has any hope that reconciliation might be possible to chase that down before moving ahead. But for some people, it was just that they needed to have a more cooperative relationship where they could treat each other with kindness and respect for the sake of the emotional health of their kids, so that their kids weren't caught in the middle of their own animosity, resentment, bitterness, and so on.
When you talk about everyone bringing in their own mud, is that what you mean? What is that?
Well, you hear this described in different ways, Greg. There's wounds, baggage, hang-ups, you know, addictions. You know, we have defense mechanisms that we typically develop along the way in our childhood, and, you know, some more so than others, and we bring all of this into marriage. So I've used that term mud just to describe all of that, including the hidden lies we might be telling ourselves, like, you know, I'm not enough, or I'll never make it, or one of mine was, I'm better off alone. It could be, my voice doesn't matter. You know, those kinds of self-limiting beliefs that lurk beneath the surface, and they're often hard to identify. I can honestly say that I went into marriage having no idea whatsoever that I had any hidden lies or self-limiting beliefs operating beneath the surface. But over several years of our marriage, and with the assistance of counseling, it became clear that, you know, they were there, and I needed to allow God's healing work on those hidden lies.
Yeah. And for me, those lies are so destructive. They attack, I think, at the core identity of who someone is, or at least they can. And as Christians, it seems like we have both the greatest of resources at our fingertips, and we also have these sometimes unspoken assumptions about, well, because I have all those resources, I shouldn't even be struggling. And so now we bury these things deeper and deeper in. And I know for my wife and I, Robin and I, the ability to be able to admit some of those things out loud in the presence of really two or three trusted friends was the beginning of going, oh, okay, so we don't have to even spend the energy of pretending to be perfect about this. We can spend our energy in a different way towards working through this. You're actually giving people handles and ideas and steps, and we need some of these practical steps to climb out of some of the relational, just the impasses that we find ourselves in. Can you talk about some of these steps?
Yeah, sure. So I'll just say that, you know, people, when they're struggling in a marriage, often think that there's really only two choices. You know, should I stay or should I go? But I think it's clarifying to recognize that there are actually three options: split, survive, and save. And splitting is obvious, but surviving is staying in the relationship with a feeling of being disconnected, with emotional disconnection. And what I like to point out about surviving is that you don't have to stay in that phase or season of marriage, even if you find yourself there, and not to panic, but just to be real and honest about where you actually are in your relationship. Because if you allow your marriage to just survive over a long period of time, chances are that the pain of not having that emotional connection that God intends us to have just ends up leaking out somehow, mental health issues or addictions, or, you know, turning your attentions outside of the marriage, just all kinds of ways that pain can leak out. But there are ways that you can rebuild a connection, even if you've become disconnected. So yes, the good question is, how do you do that? There are so many ways. I would only be able to touch on a few just to get us started, Greg. One of those ways is to recognize that if you're disconnected, you need some shared experiences. Like, intimacy is made up of shared experiences. And at the beginning, if you're in a struggling place and things aren't going well, then just try to pick something that you would both be interested in and just experience it together. I've heard a story of a couple who were on the brink of divorce, and they were already talking about divorce arrangements, but they decided to choose one television program that they would watch once a week together, just so that they would be doing something together to see where that would lead. And eventually, over time, it did lead them to, you know, then going out to dinner and then experiencing deeper conversations. And anyway, they made it through that very tough period. So having experiences together and making them new or exciting also really helps to build your bond together. In addition to that, just paying attention to your own emotions and those of your spouse, and actually becoming a student of your spouse's emotions, really helps to build that closer bond. Not all of us have grown up in homes where we're good at actually just validating each other's emotions and being able to, you know, enter in even briefly just to be there with your spouse and their emotions. You know, many of us grew up in homes where emotions were dismissed, denied, ignored. No, 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 don't feel that way. That's, you know, yeah, I think that kind of handling of emotions might sound very familiar. But research shows that we're far better off if we can actually validate each other and just allow each other to have our own emotions.
This can happen fairly simply. I've heard you talk about an oncologist who was speaking to med students. And that to me is a great example of, there are steps you can take to turn up that intimacy dial. Really, like today, there are steps you could take. Could you share a little bit of that with us?
I was so taken by this oncologist's talk that even though it was decades ago, it has stayed with me as if it was yesterday. So he was training a group of physicians on bedside manner. And he said, when I'm in a patient meeting and I'm giving a patient their cancer diagnosis and my patient starts to cry, and I go on and explain all the very best cutting edge treatments that we're going to offer. So they'll have world-class treatment. And I don't stop and acknowledge her emotion. Then two things happen. She perceives me as being cold, and trust takes a hit. But he said, on the other hand, if I give my patient a diagnosis and she starts to cry, and I stop and say, I'm so sorry. Or if I would cry too if I was in your shoes. And then I go on and describe all the very best treatments I have to offer. The opposite happens. She perceives me as being warm. And even better than that, her trust in me is better. It's enhanced. And it's the same with all of our relationships, including marriage, that if we can stop and just briefly enter in or identify with what your spouse is saying, like, wow, that meeting must have been really tough. If you can empathize with your spouse's emotions, it builds the connection between you.
Yeah. So when Proverbs says that words have the power of life and death, it doesn't even take a lot of words to just attend to someone. Yeah. Okay. That's really good. Now to flip it around though, I am also thinking in Proverbs where it says it is the glory of a person to overlook an offense. And I've heard you talk about criticism and a really practical challenge for any marriage. Doesn't matter where you are on the continuum or what grade you're giving yourself, this idea of how we criticize each other.
So this idea of a criticism fast. So, you know, we fast food sometimes and, you know, fast various things for Lent. But this idea of fasting criticism first came to Carrie and I, several years ago. I think we were already on the other side of our 15 years. So our marriage was already starting to make progress out of that pit. But it was a challenge for us. And we took it up seriously. We decided, okay, let's see how long we can go without saying something critical or judgmental of the other person. And I will humbly admit that I think I only made it 3 or 4 days. In the first go around, Carrie made it 11 days. So hats off to him. He way outshone me in that first go around. But since then, we've tried it a few times. And, you know, I think despite us wanting to serve Jesus and, you know, really digging in our faith and going along this journey and in following Christ, we can still fall into habits, bad habits in communicating with each other, particularly in a full season of life, where a lot of what we're saying to each other is negative or slightly negative. You know, we can get into this season of mainly correcting each other as opposed to really connecting with each other. And having a criticism fast really forces you to pay attention. It forces you to do what Paul admonishes us to do, to bring every thought captive to Christ. So you're deliberate about the words that come out of your mouth.
As I hear you explain this, the power of life and death in words is kind of a big deal to some things that I'm trying to say to people as well. And I have a theory about that for people in leadership. Maybe, I don't know if this applies to you and Carrie or not, but I'll just talk about Robin, my wife, and I. So as a leader, I'm being asked to mentor, to lead, to direct, to guide. I mean, it's kind of what I get paid to do sometimes, right? And then I come home. Well, my wife is a recruiter, and her calling is to mentor and to guide and to coach people into various stages of employment, which means throughout much of our day, we're helping and we're tweaking and we're guiding. And then we come home and we forget to turn that off. Mm-hmm. And so I'll be, quote, leading her, or she'll be, quote, coaching me. And sometimes that takes the form of a kind of criticism. We have just talked out loud about how, I don't need you to do that right now, or I don't need you to coach me that way right now. And I wonder if that's a bit of an occupational hazard for people who are in leadership positions, that they can't sometimes turn that switch off.
Well, I love that you put it that way, Greg, because I think that is something of what happens. You know, when you're used to being in a position of authority and people come to you for opinions, or, you know, you need to raise issues, that becomes a modus operandi. It is hard to turn it off. Yeah, I love that thought. I think there's another way that I put it too, that your spouse needs a partner, not a parent. And, you know, even if you're not coming at it from the leadership perspective, I think sometimes couples get into that rut of, you know, almost parenting each other without intending to, but that's what it sounds like.
And that, I'll go right back to your word of intimacy. I think that runs counter to the intimacy that God wants between a husband and a wife. And because that is a different intimacy than that beautiful relationship between a parent and a child. And we do need to invest in this unique relationship differently. I think that's right. I would just say, as long as, just to finish my my own self confession here, is that that also, if I get into that mode and I think that authority and leading and all of that, that that's what I'm bringing to this marriage, I will forget that the idea of serving and humility goes out the window, and then we're toast. We've got to be open with each other about how we have these power dynamics in our relationships, and what does it mean to serve another? Because I think it's interfering with intimacy at the core levels. Do you see how the way you and Carrie have navigated things, from openly talking about struggles and longings and healing and forgiving, you name it, can you tell us how you have seen that play out in your parental relationship? I mean, with your sons, what do you think they picked up from you along the way, along the journey? What do you hope they picked up from you along the way, along the journey?
Yeah, our kids were in middle school when Carrie and I were struggling deeply. And they've seen us move from a place of really dysfunctional conflict to a place where we listen to each other more readily, repair more easily, and do have a I think a more robust approach of serving each other. So I, you know, they've been able to see the before and after, so to speak. I've, you know, there's part of me that wishes they didn't have to see the before. But the reality is that, you know, there were many reasons that we ended up in conflict that we unpacked over time. And, you know, I explain. But I think, you know, God is our Redeemer, a God of redemption. And I think what the boys have picked up is that you may feel like this is a desperate period without a solution, but there's a way to move through it. You know, God shows us a way through it, and there can be something so vibrant and beautiful on the other side. You have no idea. So that, my hope and prayer is that is what our kids have taken away from what they've witnessed in our marriage.
Well, I want to affirm that. And when you were saying earlier that sometimes we come into marriage relationships, any relationship, saying, well, I don't know if you can talk about this or how to talk about this. God be praised when a husband and a wife will openly and appropriately admit that they're seeking Him in front of their kids. I just think that's a part of what's going to build a resilient next generation. So I, for one, am grateful when I hear husbands and wives that are willing to do that appropriately. But and then kids get to see what it looks like when God leads you through a conflict towards restoring and repairing. Could I just ask you a couple more questions here? One of the big ones is, I think you guys have a unique position it's fairly unique in that Carrie is a well-known author, pastor. You know, his podcast is well known, and you have a successful career. And what would you say to people whose marriage is in one level or another in the fishbowl, and other people are watching, other people are looking to you?
I think the most important thing is having real and honest conversations with each other about what you each need for self-care, because in a tough period of ministry, the temptation is to leave things like exercise or a full night's sleep aside because other things are pressing. But the reality is that, you know, God gives us work, but also gives us rest as a gift. And, you know, it'll be strengthening for both of you together to approach this issue of how do we ensure that we each have time alone with God, eat healthy meals, get our bodies moving somehow. Something's better than nothing in that area. And, you know, and protecting each other's sleep. I also do believe that ministry leadership, it exerts a type of pressure that we sometimes respond to by becoming isolated. And by isolated, I don't just even mean not hanging out with friends. What I mean is not creating the time and space to actually get into real conversations about what's really going on and how the pressures are impacting you at home, in your marriage, in your family. And that's the kind of conversation that you probably don't want to have with too many people, but you need to have with someone, with at least one or two close others, people who are safe, who will keep your confidence, will also pray with you and help you see what you're not seeing.
Yeah. And those relationships take time and intentionality, don't they? I mean, you're not going to dial that up tomorrow. Whether you're in a church, whether you're in a nonprofit, in an organization, a team, a business, and you're one of those folks that's sort of in that circle that sometimes does get tapped on and referred to and confessed to. Anything you would say to those people as they cheer on and champion and sometimes minister to a couple that is struggling in their ministry or their role?
Sometimes it's a really delicate balance between being a listening ear, validating your friend's emotions, just like I said, with, you know, within your marriage, with the oncologist story, and then pushing back sometimes on unrealistic plans or expectations. Or, you know, guiding your friend in a certain direction. Sometimes that's a delicate balance. But you don't want to be in the position of being a close confidant without being honest about what you really think. Even if you know that you're going to be saying something that your friend doesn't want to hear but needs to hear. So those conversations that require truth and grace and love are ones that we need to lean into if we're really going to help and be a support.
The people that God has placed in my life that do that, when they're and they always find that balance, the fact that they are willing to let me be human and frail and vomit stuff out, just the mere fact that they're allowing me to do that creates the margin then for me to actually hear the truth that they're going to speak back to me that might not be affirming what I just, you know, barfed out in front of them. So that is the grace. The grace is in listening and in sitting in that pain with me. And then, you know, sometimes the truth is the speaking of, okay, half of that was true and the other half is, you know, and then you're off and running. It is a package deal, though. I completely agree. Tony, thank you so much for being with us today, sharing your heart, your wisdom, your faith, your experience. And we're going to continue to point people towards your book. Just thank you for a whole bunch of people for what you and Carrie are doing and the way you're pouring into lives that you probably won't even know about this side of heaven. So just thanks for joining us today.
Well, Greg, thank you for your ministries and in this podcast and all you do. I really appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to a Godzillion in One podcast. Subscribe, share this episode with a friend, and head over to gregholder.com for the show notes. And as always, stop and notice this week the shockingly and seemingly endless ways to connect with each other, this world, and the God who made it all. We'll see you next time.